I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, fresh back from vacation, we have a ton to catch up on, including what's happening on college campuses. Plus, the Washington State Democratic Party sells its endorsement in the governor's race for $1 million. And
did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Governor Kristi Noem somehow finds a way to top her story about dog murder. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Oh, we missed you guys. We missed you so much. Nicole and I were both on tropical vacations. I think I look a little tanner. This is all you get, okay? This is as tan as I get, because I did try. And then I was greeted back in Washington by pouring rain, so that was nice. A ton happened while we were gone. We moved into a new studio, which we're still working on. We've got some side sets that we're working on, but it's nice to be sort of semi-moved in. But we missed a ton of news. And I was like, of course, every time I go on vacation, I miss the best stories that are just perfect for our show. So we're going to talk about a few of them today, including what's happening on the college campuses, this insane news about the State Democratic Party selling their endorsement for $1 million. I do just want to touch on this. Now, I heard rumblings of this. For some reason, I didn't believe them, because it seemed kind of odd to me. But then the news came out this morning, Tiffany Smiley's running for Congress. So Tiffany Smiley, of course, the Republican who ran for Senate the last cycle against Patty Murray and lost. And I will say lost by more than we thought she would based on polling. But she came out today and announced, which is the first day of the filing filing period for candidates, which I'll talk more about in a moment, that she is running for Congress in the 4th District. She said, "My journey to politics started at Walter Reed Army Hospital almost 20 years ago, and I pushed back against government dysfunction and won. Now it's time for me to push back from inside Congress and win for my friends and neighbors in Washington's 4th. Join me as we take the fight to Congress." Now, what's interesting is Washington's 4th already has a Republican incumbent. It's Dan Newhouse, Congressman Dan Newhouse, who has been there for some time, but has drawn the ire of a faction of the right who's mad that he voted to impeach former President Donald Trump. And there's a segment of the Republican Party in the state that has not forgiven him and has no plans to forgive him for that. But what's also interesting on top of that is he already has an opponent on the more pro-Trump side, Jared Sessler. And Jared Sessler is the one who got the endorsement at the Washington State Republican Party convention. So you already have this sort of more mainstream Republican incumbent. You have a Trump challenger who got the endorsement of the party at the convention. And then here you have Tiffany Smiley, really out of nowhere. Again, she announces her candidacy on the same day that the filing period opens, because that's happening all week, for candidates for office. So late into the game in terms of congressional campaign standards, but also, again, just very odd. I'm not saying she doesn't have the right to run or that she might, I mean, she could win. She has great, great name recognition. She already has this infrastructure of donors that she's going to be able to tap into. There's things I like about it and that I have questions about, I guess. The thing I like about it is I think anybody should be able to run. I don't think one of the party loyalty issue always bothers me, where it's like, well, I can't run because there's already a Republican in the seat or a Democrat in the seat. Because I really see that as robbing voters of the opportunity to choose who might be best for the position. So I don't care if a Republican runs against a Republican. What do I care? That doesn't matter to me. So good for her for not caring either. But I'm kind of curious what she thinks she's going to carve out. Because the pro-Trump people, you know, there have been rah-rah Jared Sessler, who just got the endorsement. And then people who still support Dan Newhouse, those are diehard Dan Newhouse supporters because they've supported him through, you know, his impeachment vote, through all the vitriol and hate and anger that he got for that. And are they really going to turn around and abandon him now? So it's just fascinating. So, you know, we've talked about Republican divisions. This is like is there a word when you divide it by three? Trivision? No? Bivision? Why? I don't know. Bivision. Wow, that sounds... bisexual vision.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just interesting. I don't know. And maybe she's counting on there being a little bit of a rift there and people who are tired of it and just saying, okay, well, let's just go with Tiffany Smiley. We won't go with Newhouse. We won't go with, you know, Jared Sessler and the Trump side of it. And Tiffany's like our way out of this disaster that's happened here. Republicans are really just in disarray right now. Can I say that? Absolutely in disarray. But news like this is going to be, you're going to see little nuggets drop about people filing their declarations for their candidacy officially or not filing. There might be some people who've decided, hey, my campaign isn't going anywhere, and so I'm not going to do it. So today, May 6th, is the first day that candidates can file their declaration of candidacy to be on the ballot for November. May 10th is the last day, so it's a very short period of time. And then there is an opportunity May 13th. If for some reason they file this week and then they decide, eh, never mind, they can unfile by May 13th, and then their name won't appear on the ballot in the August primary, which is interesting. Who's going to be the person that's like, oh, it's May 10th, filing for public office, and then May 13th, they're like, never mind. Hello, Nicole.
Hi.
Do you just want to say hi to people, considering that they haven't seen how tan you are yet from the Bahamas?
See how I look on the camera here?
Yeah, we're trying to eat. Look, I feel okay. We had some, you know, it's a new studio, so we were panicking in panic
Anybody
mode.
Was very concerned about you not having a flag behind you, but instead I have it.
Yes, I know people are concerned about me not having a flag, but we'll try this, you know, maybe if we don't like it, or maybe you just get a little sprinkle of the flag with Nicole in it and stuff. So, yeah. But we're working on a side set and some fun stuff. And so, you know, when everything's all done in here, we'll take some videos. I've been taking some before and after renovation style videos. So it'll be good and much more useful for us, I think, to be able to expand content.
Really quick, back to the story. Why do they do the convention before it? All of these people file?
Well, because what the idea behind the Republican convention was is to have party unity, which is hilarious considering
which
how the convention comical. Went.
Yes.
But they were supposed to sign this declaration that said if they didn't get the endorsement, they would drop out. And so the convention happening before this process of filing was with the intent of coalescing around an individual Republican candidate in each race. And then the other one, and there are some who are not going to proceed forward because they didn't get the nomination and they're going to honor that process. There are some who aren't as well. But so that's the point of doing it after. But Tiffany Smiley, she's just like, here I am. So
I've got mixed reaction from Republicans on
it. It was interesting, though, because didn't we have to go dig up our last Tiffany Smiley interview where she was talking about the Endeavor PAC that she started. Because I swear we asked her about 2024 and she said she's not running for anything, which and everybody can change their minds. But did we not ask her? I swear. So I'll have to go dig up that interview.
You're right.
Because I'm pretty sure she said that it's not, that the PAC money isn't for her. So does that change? Is the PAC money now, I don't think it can be used for her because you can't coordinate between PACs and campaigns. So anyway, we'll look into that. But it just happened this morning. So I wanted to show you guys because I heard about it. I was like, no way. Okay, let's talk about what the heck is happening on college campuses. You guys, this is insane. I mean, it's mental. What else do you want me to say about it? It is mental. It's a combination of things. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about every little wrinkle in this story. These kids need to be, if they are students, they need to be expelled. If they're not students, they have no right to be on college campuses, vandalizing things, taking public areas over that belong to students, harassing Jewish students and Jewish professors, which we'll get to in a moment. You know, I think there's a mix of social contagion. We know that is the case for a lot of these weird social, cultural, political issues. Oh, my friends are doing it. I mean, we saw that NYU protester a couple weeks ago who was asked, why are you here? And she's like, oh, I don't know. You know, we came to support Columbia. I'm not sure why we're here. So it's social contagion. And then there is an element that I think is really, really nefarious of outside forces coming onto these campuses and trying to influence our kids, trying to influence them with this anti-American mind virus. And it's not just this now, you know, pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, you know, oh, terrorists are coming in and trying to influence our kids. This is for everything. Anti-capitalism, mind virus. Anti-police, mind virus. You name it. There are outside forces constantly trying to divide us and trying to push this anti-American sentiment on young people. And on kids. And this is just a continuation of this we've been seeing the playbook for a long time, but now it's just particularly grotesque because you're doing it in a way that has them essentially cheering on terrorists. And the fact that you don't have so-called leaders speaking out more forcefully about this is insane. And, you know, I'm going to get to what's happening at UW because it's reflective of a political environment that we've been suffering through in Washington State and in Seattle for a long time. But to see that kind of political cowardice and kowtowing to insane, insane activists and an insane ideology and looking the other way at blatantly unacceptable things, to see that now spreading all across the country, not just in liberal strongholds, but to universities and colleges and other areas of the country that haven't typically been as susceptible to this kind of extremism, is really, really scary stuff. And I was looking, I was kind of taking note as we were gone last week of individual things that were happening so I could talk about them when I got back. But what's happening on campuses is horrifying. I mean, it should be horrifying for every American, but particularly for Jewish Americans and Jewish people around the world. You know, on campuses like MIT, Jewish students can't move around freely.
If I walk through and there's violence, it's not because of me. I will walk with my hands up the entire time waving an American flag. If there is violence, it's because they put their hands on me and they should be punished, not a Jew wearing a kippah with an American flag.
It's not just Jewish students. On multiple college campuses, not only in the United States, but in Canada, Jewish professors haven't been able to move around freely.
Do you think they're not letting you in because they think...
Because I'm Jewish.
Because you have an Israeli accent?
Correct, because I'm Jewish, because I'm, they know where I'm coming from. They just want to get me... Yeah?
So I sent someone in to go determine where
we're at. As if these activists control these spaces. And I guess for all intents and purposes, they do. Colleges are letting them control the spaces. Universities are letting them control the spaces. Police, in some instances, are even letting them control the spaces because they're telling Jewish students and Jewish professors, hey, we don't want to agitate them. We don't want to aggravate them. So just stay away. Giving in to the crazy. Speaking of crazy, and speaking of this anti-American sentiment that is being pushed now through this movement, if you can even call it that. Watch this clip out of NYU.
So which side do y'all think North Korea supports, Palestine or Israel? Just guess.
Palestine.
It is Palestine. The DPRK has actually never recognized the state of Israel. They have always upheld the right of Palestinian people to self-determination and resistance. And this is beyond moral and rhetorical support. The DPRK has actively armed and trained Palestinian resistance for decades.
Now our students are cheering on North Korea and Kim Jong-un on our college campuses. And we want to pretend that these aren't outside forces, maybe even outside the country at play, that are telling these kids what to think, that are pushing this anti-American sentiment onto them, and God knows what their end goal is. Imagine that. I mean, all the craziness that we've endured in this country in the last few years, and, you know, increasingly so, I think, in the last 5 years. I would have never thought that it would be somewhat normal or accepted on an American elite, the College of an American Elite University, to have a student sitting there praising North Korea for helping to fund terrorists to kill innocent Israelis. This is the worst it's ever been in my lifetime. And you see clips like that, and then you see the utter cowardice from school officials. Hell, from parents. Man, if that was my kid, yoink. I'd lock him in a basement till this whole thing's over. Utter cowardice from politicians on the left. Frankly, I don't think that we've seen cowardice on this particular issue from politicians on the right. And it reminds me a lot, I drew the comparison a couple weeks ago to what's happening on these college campuses and Seattle's occupied protest zone known as CHOP, because these are occupations of these campuses. And where else has gone through something similar to this but here in Seattle in the summer of 2020, when you had armed far-left activists that took over 6 square blocks of Seattle for an entire month. And the only way they were able to do it is because of the complete cowardice of elected officials who, for some reason, would never kowtow to the far right, but when it comes to the far left, completely hands off. And I'm reminded of CHOP again this week because I'm thinking forward. Because we've been there. We know where this ends. We know where CHOP ended. CHOP ended in death. CHOP ended in murder. And only then, only when there was bloodshed, did politicians who'd called it, you know, a summer of love come back and say, oh, you know, we've got to go in there, send the police in. Did politicians who'd openly participated and advocated for it come back and say, you know, maybe it's time to end this. So we know what happened with CHOP, so that's what's going to happen on these college campuses. If we don't believe that, then we're fooling ourselves. Particularly, I was reminded of Councilwoman Lisa Herbold. So you remember, she's not a councilwoman anymore. Yeah, she's gone. Oh, good, because this reminds me of one of the reasons she needed to leave. Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold, she was one of several council members who went down to the what would become CHOP in Seattle during the protests that happened there, and they took smiling selfies like, yay, look at us. Look at us with the activists who are clashing with police every night. Insane stuff. So Lisa Herbold's out there for that, supporting the crime and the violence and the unrest that led to, that allowed for the formation of CHOP. Now, Lisa Herbold and her other friends on the city council, they then watched, after participating in it and excusing it, they then watched what that kind of lawless environment devolved into. And again, it devolved into death. It devolved into the murder of young kids of color, which I thought the whole thing was about protecting Black lives. And it took 2.5 weeks. 2.5 weeks of that for Councilwoman Lisa Herbold to be the first council member who'd supported the zone to come out and speak against it. I remember this very well at the time. She published an op-ed in The Stranger saying, we must end the conditions in CHOP that are leading to violence and death. It's long past time for us all to take collective responsibility for the violence that has occurred in CHOP since it was first established over 2 weeks ago. And I thought at the time, you have to be kidding me. Collective responsibility? I'm not taking responsibility for Jack. Because a lot of us spoke out about CHOP. My crew was mobbed the night that CHOP was formed. We were forced to seek refuge in a fire station and had to hold up there for 30 minutes waiting to figure out how we were going to get out. And they had to sneak us out of this building because there wasn't a cop in sight. I knew the night CHOP was formed that it was dangerous and it was violent. And only after people are killed, you have council members who are like, maybe this isn't safe. You think? Now compare that to what's happening right now on college campuses. We all know it's not safe. We all know that, first of all, there have already been acts of violence. There have already been acts of intimidation. And we know, one, because we have a brain, we have common sense, right? And because we saw what happened in Seattle's occupied protest zone, where you have a lawless area controlled by anarchists. We know that even on college campuses that haven't turned violent yet in these occupied protests, that it will, that it's only a matter of time. So you think that would give, especially in our state, you think that that would give our leaders the courage and the receipts to be able to say, we have to stop this now before people die. But of course not, because this is the far left and you cannot give in to the far left. You cannot, as a Democrat, tell the far left that what they're doing has gone too far, that it's too much. And Shasti Conrad, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, has now proven that. Despite ample evidence that I'll illustrate in a moment, the chair of the state Democratic Party came out with a statement defending the occupied protest happening on the campus of the University of Washington. She said in this statement, Chair Conrad, a statement on peaceful UW campus protests. She said, as we continue to monitor the peaceful gathering of students at the University of Washington, the Washington State Democratic Party staunchly supports the legal rights of all members of the public to peacefully assemble. Each of us has a constitutional right to protest in places that are open to the public, including students. The Washington State Democratic Party preemptively opposes any actions taken by the University of Washington leadership and law enforcement that would violate students' First Amendment rights. We urge everyone in the protest to maintain public safety as they peacefully exercise their fundamental civil rights. Now, not only is that statement completely wrong on a factual basis, but if this were a group of right-wing neo-Nazis who were occupying a space on the campus of the University of Washington, Governor Inslee's alma mater, Bob Ferguson's alma mater, do you really believe that Shasti Conrad and the State Democratic Party would put out a statement saying, we're monitoring this peaceful gathering of right-wing neo-Nazis, and we support their rights, and we encourage police not to do anything about it, and we encourage the University of Washington not to do anything about it? Of course not. Would Jay Inslee stay silent? Of course not. Would Bob Ferguson stay silent? Of course not. In fact, they'd have a big old press conference every single day. It would be one phone call from the governor's office to UW, clear them out. But left-wing Nazis? Leave them there. We'll defend them. We'll defend their First Amendment rights. And look, I'll defend people's First Amendment rights too. When it is peaceful, when it is lawful. That's not what this is. And it wasn't what it was when Shasti Conrad put the statement out. By the time she put the statement out, our friend Jonathan Cho had already been assaulted down there while he was just trying to film things.
Just assaulted right now by several members of the pro-Hamas crowd, Antifa. Thankfully, I just got away with a bloody hand here. They ripped away my phone, started attacking me, so I had to leave the area, but this is what the far-left activists do. They've taken over the quad, and they're only allowing people who are sympathetic to their cause on campus right now.
And that includes Jewish students and Jewish professors. Our friend Jason Rantz. Again, I want you to watch these clips in the context of what the State Democratic Party said about this being, oh, just a peaceful, lawful gathering of students, and we encourage the university and police not to do anything about it. So she must not care that a Jewish professor who was on campus was stalked and harassed.
So then could you just, like, do us a favor and get out of here?
No. What are you doing here? I mean, this is a public space. People are allowed to be here as long as they obey university regulations. You guys are the ones who are not obeying regulations. You're the ones who should leave.
Yeah, I agree. Shasti Conrad doesn't agree, though. She thinks all of this is just fine, and she obviously doesn't care that Jewish students at the University of Washington are not being allowed to move around freely.
Listen, you can have a request, but I have the right to walk freely on my own campus.
And we have the right to say no to your request.
Yeah, I have the right to walk freely through my campus, so please, I'm not trying to touch you. I'm not.
Please let us go. Please do not physically block anyone. This is public space.
I'm asking you kindly to move so I can pass through my own campus. Please.
I had a conversation with you earlier. Yes. Again, we're happy to have
you.
Let's have a conversation. People want to talk. Like, we're not here.
I want to talk with you guys.
Wait, let's have a conversation over
this. But you guys are actually.
We're going to walk this way.
I want to walk over here. This is where I want to walk.
I'm going to ask you to not yell.
I'm sorry. I'll turn off the music.
Thank you.
Yes.
That would be the
okay. I just want to walk this way.
I think the reason that you want to walk that way is because it is antagonistic.
I want to walk this way because it's my campus and I'm allowed to walk this way.
Yeah, it's not antagonizing to talk about the death of Jewish people as if it's righteous. That's not antagonizing. But a Jewish student who wants to walk down a sidewalk on the campus where he pays tuition to go to. That's antagonizing. You can't do that. You don't have a First Amendment right to stop people's movements in public places. You do not have a First Amendment right to do that. Shasti Conrad with the Democratic Party. Do you not know that? Do you not know what First Amendment protections provide for? Do you not care about Jewish professors being harassed and stalked? Do you not care about Jewish students who can't walk down a sidewalk on the campus that they pay tuition at? Is that really the side that you're going to take in this? And there was a video put out by Como News, and I also saw some follow-up video to this of a Jewish student with a Israeli flag ripped out of their hand. And the agitator, after ripping it out of their hand, runs away with it. And there was a follow-up video to it where they were tearing it into pieces. So they want to be able to, in the words of the Democratic Party, just peacefully assemble, you know, share their views about Hamas and Palestine. And they feel like they have a right to do that, to have an occupied protest on a college campus, and nobody should interfere with them. But God forbid a student walks around peacefully with an Israeli flag. Can't have that. We got to take that out of his hand. We've got to rip it up. We got to burn it. And after all, the state Democratic Party, the woman in charge of the party, says it's okay. And she's telling people to let us do it. And we wonder why they feel so emboldened. Now, this, what's happening tomorrow is the peace de resistance, I have to say, of all of this and the hypocrisy of it. Because remember, it would never be allowed for right-wing neo-Nazis. So tomorrow at the University of Washington, it just so happens that Charlie Kirk with Turning Point USA is going to be there. Now, in my mind, and he has an event on campus. Now, in my mind, I'm like, that's bad timing. You know, it is. But he has every right in the world to be there. And I don't think that Charlie Kirk is going to go out and try to physically assault or agitate or harass the pro-Palestine crowd that's there. He's got his event. He's going to do that event. But these students, and I think a lot of them are outsiders who have this occupied protest, they don't want him to come. They do not believe that that kind of hate belongs on the campus of the University of Washington. And Hannah Krieg, who's a writer for The Stranger, agrees. So they're trying to push to get Charlie Kirk canceled. Now, think about this. Before I read this, think about this. Students that are currently suggesting they have a First Amendment right to be on campus and to block Jewish professors and to block Jewish students and to rip up Israeli flags, they're mad that Charlie Kirk is going to be on campus exercising his actual First Amendment rights. His actually peaceful demonstration of his First Amendment rights. Hannah Krieg, again, The Stranger. Some UW students are calling on the university to cancel Charlie Kirk's event at the Hub Tuesday. They believe he and the right-wing crowd he will attract may agitate the University for Gaza. I guess that's what their group is called. The Popular University for Gaza, that's in the Quad, which has been peaceful and cooperative with the administration. We've already shown that they haven't been peaceful. And if the administration is fine with them harassing Jewish professors and Jewish students, then we have a much bigger problem on our hands. So again, the concern is that Charlie Kirk and his right-wing presence on campus is going to be agitating to them, so much so that they think they might be so triggered by it, so agitated by it, that they're going to hurt him? That they're going to hurt the people who are there? You notice that they're not saying in this that they're worried the right-wingers or Charlie Kirk are going to come assault them. They're worried their presence will agitate them. And we all know what happens when the left-wingers are agitated. We all know what happens. And they're taking their cues from Hamas. So God forbid what it means when they get agitated. I mean, how entitled? It's the height of entitlement to believe you have a right to take over a public space on a college campus, harass Jewish students, harass and stalk Jewish professors, assault a journalist, rip up Israeli flags. And then you have a right to say, oh yeah, but also this guy is presence
because of his politics is triggering to me. So even though he's going to be speaking in that building over there, and I don't have to go into that building and listen if I don't want to, that's so agitating and triggering to me that we want the university to tell him that he can't come. These kids are doomed. They are doomed in the real world. Absolutely doomed. And we've allowed this. We've allowed them to believe that what they're doing is right and righteous and they're on the correct side of things. They're not. They never have been. And again, I'm going to put this warning out there, and I wish I didn't have to do it. People are going to die. People are going to die. Students are going to die. Unless we put an end to this now. That's not a guess. That is based on the experience we have had with protests just like this one. We're seeing the same sorts of signs, increased agitation, increased confrontations, increased hate and vitriol and violence, the same sort of signs, increased lawlessness that led to deaths at CHOP. And if you don't believe it's going to happen on our college campuses, you are very, very wrong. And people like Shasti Conrad will be the ones left with blood on their hands. Shameful. And unreal. All right, we have a new sponsor on the show as of last week, which I'm very excited about because honestly, like I said on the show last week when we debuted it, I was like, get me out of this. Like, get me out of this craziness. When I'm done with this show, you will never see me again. Does that mean? I'm serious though. It'll be years from now. I don't know when you can retire as a podcast host. Can I retire? Like, do I have a retirement? I don't know. But when that day comes, maybe 15 years from now, I will disappear and you will never see me again because I will be hanging out at some place like Natchez RV Resort. See that? I'm so good at these segues. So Natchez RV Resort is having its grand opening phase two. And I got to tell you, this place sounds absolutely amazing. All the things they have there. First of all, if you're thinking, oh, RV resort, RV lot, that's not for me. That's not for my family. They've got, first of all, 300 days of sunshine. Year-round fun for the whole family, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, wine tasting, dog parks, places to hang out with your dogs. They got a new pool and a sauna that's opening up. Huge clubhouse, 4,300 square foot, gourmet kitchen, fitness center, showers, laundry. So this place is like its own little paradise away from all the crazy. So again, the grand opening for phase two at Natchez RV Resort is May 18th and 19th. If you want to reserve your showing for that grand opening weekend, make sure to do that because they're limiting it to just 21 families to be able to come in for the grand opening showing. They have 21 extra large lots from just $79.99. Reservations are going to fill up fast. I mean, the first phase grand opening sold out really quick. So reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, or you can schedule your reservation at NatchezRVResort.com. Little paradise away from the insanity. Wouldn't that be nice? Soon-ish for me. Soon-ish. Businesses, we have done several stories on this theme, where you have government that allows things to get completely out of control, and then businesses have to clean up the mess. Whether it's around homelessness or substance abuse, it's like, oh, you got a homeless crisis. Hey, there's tents in front of my business. Well, yeah, I gotta deal with that. Hey, there's a druggie that keeps shooting up and passing out in my alcove. Well, you're gonna have to deal with that. We're not gonna do anything with it. And there is now a business owner in Little Saigon in Seattle that has been dealing with graffiti for some time, getting tagged up by gangs or whoever it is that wants to graffiti their place. And now the city is basically saying to this business, you're not cleaning it up fast enough, so we're going to fine you. Let's talk about it. The segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So we, on two episodes ago on Sundays with Subscribers, we had on John Bennett to talk about this sort of issue, like hardworking people just getting screwed over. hardworking people who the government's doing very little for, and then the government is expending so much energy coming after them for menial things, as opposed to just working with them and saying, hey, you know, can you do this or that, or how can we help you? So John Bennett owns some properties in the Georgetown neighborhood of Seattle, and one of the examples that he gave us when he was on the show is just being harassed by code enforcement, and he had a particularly frustrating example about the sidewalks outside one of his businesses.
I had a scissor lift out on the street, and I was painting and, you know, fixing up the exterior of my building. Mm-hmm. And I got a ticket because I did not get a street use permit. Or it was a street use permit? Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, man.
It was a street use permit. And so, of course, I got rid of the scissor lift, mm-hmm. and then that went away. And then I got another one. Well, the next time I was working, I kept getting, and then I realized that the inspector goes to the coffee shop right next to the building every morning. And so every morning I'm up there early with this thing. So finally I talked to him. I said, "What, you know, what is going on here? I mean, I got to fix my building." He said, "Well, you need to use a street use permit. You need to rent that city of Seattle. Sidewalk belongs to the city of Seattle. You have to lease that from us to do your work." And I said, and I'm standing there right there talking to this person from, I guess it was SDOT. I said, okay, I guess I understand that. I said, how do I do that? And they said, well, you go downtown and you get a permit and you pay it and all that kind of thing. And I said, okay. And then when the person was leaving, they also said, and also, by the way, I want to tell you, the sidewalk on the side of the building here, it's all cracked. You'll need to replace that. That's a hazard. Wow. And I said, whoa, no, hold on one second. It's like, either you own the sidewalk and I rent it from you, or I own the sidewalk and I fix it. You can't you can't have the best of both worlds.
What do you say to that?
He said, well, no, that's the law. You have to maintain our sidewalk. And I said, well, I'll do one or the other. I'll either be on my scissor lift for free and fix the sidewalk, or I'll pay for the scissor lift and you fix the sidewalk.
Yeah, so it gives you a sense of the insanity that some of these businesses are stuck dealing with, not to mention that, you know, he had been harassed about a hedge growing over a sidewalk when down the street the sidewalks were completely covered by homeless tents. And he's like, what is going on here? Fine, you know, has to go to court. He had to go to court for a sandwich board that he put up outside of one of his restaurants. Really crazy stuff. So this story that I saw in Como News really struck me. One, because of the neighborhood that it's in. So the headline, popular Seattle deli faces persistent graffiti, high cleanup costs, and possible fines. And the story is about Saigon Deli, which is located on South Jackson Street. And people are, as they do in a lot of areas in Little Saigon, graffitiing the heck out of the place. And apparently the city is not happy that Little Saigon, that the Saigon Deli isn't cleaning this graffiti up fast enough that some, you know, juveniles or gang members put there, that they're threatening to fine them $100 a day or $5,000 max. Now, one of the reasons this is such an interesting story and location, not to say that this probably isn't happening to business owners elsewhere, is that we know that even the mayor of Seattle, he's had photo ops in this exact area on South Jackson. Remember when he came into office and he's like, we're going to clean up the problem areas, 3rd and Pine, I think 19th and Jackson, somewhere around there, and in Little Saigon, and he's out there with a paintbrush painting up these exact walls on these businesses that were just covered in graffiti and beautifying the area. So this has been such a problem in this area, the lawlessness that has been allowed to continue, that the mayor himself has had photo ops there cleaning up graffiti. And now the city's going to turn around and tell this business owner in Little Saigon, you're not cleaning it up fast enough. This graffiti that you've been plagued with because we let things get out of control in the city of Seattle, we're going to fine you $100 a day. It's genuinely insane. Here's a clip of his conversation with Como News.
Bedang tells me it's a cycle that seems never ending.
Well, sometimes every day, sometimes every week, we don't know, you know, because we out of control. They do at night time, even on the daytime, we see it, we can do nothing.
So it's happening, he says, sometimes every night, every week. It costs money to clean it up. It costs time to clean it up. I mean, heck, as a small business owner, I know, and I'm not even like, I don't have to be dealing with customers and all this stuff. I mean, Lord knows if he even has time or has extra people to be able to go there and clean it up and pay the money and all of that. And the city of Seattle has the absolute audacity to say, we'll fine you $100 a day for not cleaning it up, even though the mayor has said this specific area is so bad. How about the city of Seattle, instead of harassing this owner of this deli, get some patrols out there. Says, you know what we're going to do? Hey, owner of this deli. I would try to say his name, but I'll butcher it. I'm so sorry this is happening to you. You know what? We're going to put an emphasis patrol here. Hell, we're going to do a stakeout here, because we already know this is such a problem. We're going to have some foot patrols. We're going to do a stakeout. We're going to figure out who is clearly targeting your business over and over, and we're going to arrest them, and we're going to make sure that they're held accountable. Because come on, it's not a different person coming there every night, tagging the place up. Is it a few? Probably. But I bet you that if police did something, if the mayor said, yeah, make this a priority. I know we got a lot of other things going on and we're short-staffed or whatever it is, but make this a priority in this area, figure out who's doing this graffiti, and then we're going to hold them accountable to the fullest extent of the law. No, instead the city of Seattle's like, we're going to fine this business owner $100 a day, up to $5,000 if he doesn't get rid of the graffiti fast enough. If that isn't the best description of the government for you, I don't know what is, or at least Seattle government. And speaking of businesses that are routinely hit with graffiti, guess what downtown business, during all the little rioters and protesters out there doing their May 1st thing, I think it was probably connected to that. Guess what downtown business they vandalized again? The original Starbucks, which is just their favorite place to go and smash in windows. So all the tourists that came that wanted to see the original Starbucks, sorry, we're closed. Boarded up. And, you know, I remember very distinctly a time back, the summer of 2020, or it might have been into 2021 when some of those riots around racial justice were continuing, that they broke the windows at that same Starbucks down in Pike Place. I guess it's not technically the original Starbucks, right? Somebody's going to correct me on that. Technically, the original one was somewhere else, but you know which one I'm talking about, the Pike Place one. I guarantee somebody in the comments like, Brandy, that's not the original Starbucks. Okay. Andrew Lewis, Councilman Andrew Lewis. I remember when this happened, like 2021, 2020, he's like, well, it's just property damage. You know, and people will say, oh, they have insurance. Well, of course they have insurance. That's not the point. That doesn't give people carte blanche to go around and destroy other people's property and for city leaders to be like, no big deal. Or for the city of Seattle to be like, Matt, you should clean that up quicker. It's really wild stuff. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about this because I'm kind of torn on whose responsibility it should be to clean it up. Now, I am not torn on the fact that you should not be out there harassing a deli owner who's not cleaning it up fast enough. Like, no, you should be working with him to figure out how can we prevent this? You know, how can we make sure maybe you need more lighting out there or something like that, more lighting on the street. Maybe there's issues. Work with him to solve it. Don't go be like, we're going to fine it. It's really crazy stuff. But I am torn on who should pay for the graffiti to be removed from private property. Because I don't like the government and taxpayers footing the bill for everything. But I'm really torn in this instance. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, who should be responsible for covering the cost of cleaning up graffiti on businesses, storefronts, or other private property? And I said, given that the perpetrator wasn't caught. Because if the perpetrator's caught, you make them pay for it. They pay for it. You make them clean it up, then you make them pay for it in restitution. But if that doesn't happen, which we know that people aren't getting caught, whose responsibility is it? The property owner and or their insurance or the government and taxpayers? And I'll say that you guys are pretty split on this particular poll right now. I think it made a lot of you noodle a little bit. Jeff said, why do I say noodle so much lately? Every once in a while, I get into these words where I get the word in my brain and I just say it so much.
Like 100%. That's your most used one.
100%?
100%.
Do I say that a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but I didn't know. I mean, they're just words like egregious.
Yes.
I remember one time and even my friend was like, why are you saying egregious so much? I'm like, I don't know. Noodling. I've been saying noodling. Noodling?
That might be nuisance vacation, I guess.
No, I've been saying it before vacation. And
by the way, that is the original Starbucks.
No, it's not.
Yeah. There's something else about it that's not original, but that store is the first Starbucks, Pike Place Market.
I don't think that's true.
I'm reading it off the website.
Somebody tell us in comments, because I swear it was on
Alex
Denny.
Alex gave us a whole lesson.
No,
on
I
this.
Swear it was on Denny in the Denny Triangle, because I've been corrected on this before.
All right, somebody need to get off the website.
Somebody in comments will offer some insight on what I'm confused about.
1971 Pike's Place Market, and that's why they're the only ones with that.
The mermaid. Like,
yeah.
Old school.
Yeah, the old.
Okay. All right. Maybe logo. I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I just feel like somebody's corrected me on it before.
I mean, that's what it says. There's probably some other store that it, I don't know, but that was the original Starbucks.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was called something else. I don't know.
I can't remember.
Maybe it was called Howard's Cup of Joe.
I feel like a loser because we just learned it.
I know. We were just down there. We got a nice tour. So, Jeff on the Daily Poll show poll says, expecting the government to pay for it is a slippery slope that we need to get off of. If a business is required to keep their business tidy, then they will not invest in neighborhoods where crime and vandalism is rampant. Therefore, it's incumbent on government to create the type of environments where investors and small businesses want to spend their money, not flip the bill to enable criminals to keep doing what they're doing. Weiss Castle says cities have a financial obligation to provide police protection as part of their services. Failure comes with a price. KICJJ2 says, unfortunately for the taxpayers, they allow this to happen. The business and or property owners should not have to. They have already taken a financial hit for other property crimes. That's an interesting concept, too. Like, taxpayers technically vote for the people that have the policies that contribute to the lawlessness and all of that. I do agree it's a slippery slope, though. Maybe you get, like, two free graffitis on the taxpayer dime. I mean, there's also where the taxpayers will foot the bill. There's also organizations that will come out and volunteer to remove it. But none of this is getting to the root cause of the issue. None of it's solving the problem. Whether the business owner removes it, whether a volunteer removes it, whether the person who did it removes it, or whether the government removes it and the taxpayers remove it. You're not getting to the root of the problem and dealing with some of the lawless behavior that we're seeing out there. Let me get a couple comments in from X. Christian on X says, it's an unfair question. Why? I have several businesses in South King County. I even have them on video doing the vandalism and the people's faces, but the cities don't do anything to get them. Nothing. So at that point, I say the government. Well, it's not an unfair question, but I think I understand where people are torn between, you don't want the taxpayers footing the bill for everything, but also, hey, I got it on video and they're not going to catch them. So if the police don't do anything about it and then they turn around and do it again, why do I have to pay for that? I tend to agree that the government has some responsibility, particularly in certain areas, to do something about the disorder. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Join their movement for common sense and sanity, which is happening at the same time as ours. And then more people who are part of movements toward common sense and sanity, and then we won't have so much graffiti anymore. Just a thought. All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. I'm now a double member of the First Mark family, Nicole. Did you know that we're now members of the First Mark family?
Oh.
Together?
The bizzes.
Yeah. Well, Mike and I got our, you know, went through them for our personal insurance last year. And then when we did, you know, a big renovation on this space and sunk a lot of money into it, sort of like, I should make sure I up my business insurance and coverage and all that stuff. And then we've got all those haters out there. So I was like, I better get some other type of insurance and all this stuff. So now the business are also, as of like today, members of the First Mark family. Very exciting. And look, First Mark is the way to go. First of all, you never pay First Mark for their services, which is the best part, I think. And they're going, you know, they're using their expertise to go out and shop the market for you and make sure that you're getting the best price, that you're getting the insurance you need. They come back, they present it to you so you can decide, hey, do I want to keep, you know, calling these big box carriers on the phone trees and begging them to help me save money or begging them to keep me on their insurance plan? Or do I want First Mark to handle all of that for me? To me, the answer is simple. Our friend Ben Bailey also took the First Mark challenge, and he learned a lot about the kind of insurance they had and really how much better it could be.
You know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately, or were they actually, in our case, over covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new, and another one that's a few years old, and the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah, and you know what? They ended up saving $1,500 a year. Talk about that. Think of what you buy with $1,500 in savings for insurance you're getting anyway. Love it. Take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. And you can also use them for your business, as we found out. All right. Craziest story. Well, gosh. I was trying to think what the craziest story was when we were gone. It's kind of hard to compare anything to the lunacy happening on college campuses. But as far as like strictly local stories, the fact that the Washington State Democratic Party was outed for selling their endorsement in the governor's race to Bob Ferguson for $1 million, just about the best news I've ever heard. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Well, now Nicole ruined my parade because she said the zebra. We haven't talked about the zebra.
I know.
We'll side table the zebra, put the zebra in a corner.
Yep.
And then we'll get back to the zebra because I didn't even put anything in the show about the zebra today. Oh, my goodness.
That was fun.
Well, anyway, between a zebra and the State Democratic Party being absolutely ridiculous and incredible hypocrites, I don't know what I like more. So, of course, this comes off of the State Republican Party convention, which I do think was a mess. And I've talked about that on the show. And I thought the endorsement process was a disaster. And then after that, the Democratic Party for days and Bob Ferguson, they were like, the Republicans are in shambles, they're divided, they're this, they're that, they're a mess, they're a joke, clown show, whatever it is. And then it comes out that, you know, Republican Party convention might have been a little bit spicy, but at least they didn't sell their endorsement in the governor's race to Semi Bird for $1 million, because that's what the State Democratic Party is doing for Bob Ferguson. So the story comes to us from the Seattle Times. The headline, Mark Mullett says $1 million buy-in deal with Washington Democrats favors Bob Ferguson. The article describes what happened thusly. About a month ago, the state party privately told the two gubernatorial campaigns on the Democratic side that it was offering an early buy-in to the party's 2024 coordinated campaign, a combined statewide organizing effort to boost candidates up and down the ballot. The price tag for that buy-in? $1 million, with $500,000 of it due by June 1st. So not only is there a buy-in, there's a timeline on that buy-in. Only one gubernatorial candidate would be given the buy-in opportunity, with an ad hoc committee of appointed party officials interviewing both and making a recommendation, according to a late March email sent by State Democratic Party Chair Shasti Conrad. So clearly Mark Mullett, he talked to the Seattle Times, not happy about this, is like, you want me to buy in? First of all, I don't have $1 million to give you. There's only two of us, and only one of us has $1 million in their coffers to give you, and it's Bob Ferguson. And the Democratic Party doesn't usually do this. They don't usually do an early process, pre-primary. And now not only are they doing it, but they're expecting $1 million buy-in. And look, it's because they know that they want Bob Ferguson. And instead of just saying so and saying, hey, sorry, Mark, we're endorsing Bob Ferguson, they use this really to extort money from Bob Ferguson, which I kind of feel bad for Bob in that regard, because they're like, hey, we'll support your campaign with all this stuff and all these resources and volunteers before the primary, but you got to give us $1 million. And they know he's the only one with $1 million. So they're not risking like Mark Mullett saying, okay, here's $1 million for my campaign. And now they have to endorse him because he doesn't have the money anyway. And the Seattle Times posted this full article that, or this full mailer that went out to Senator Mark Mullett and his team. It literally says to Senator Mark Mullett and his team from Chair Shasti Conrad, Washington State Democratic Party. And it's this whole, it's actually a really interesting document. It's a couple pages of their strategy, their 2024 strategy, which I hope Republicans are studying that thing front and back so they can learn what's going on. But then it says, in order to build a truly effective statewide program, we request a significant investment of $1 million from our top of ticket candidates. This buy-in guarantees inclusion in all of our get out the vote literature and scripts and benefits all Democratic candidates on the ballot by allowing us to execute an on-time full-scale program and maximize statewide get out the vote objectives. So basically, this isn't a quote unquote endorsement in the traditional sense. But it is saying that the Democratic Party's sole support in the governor's race will be for you before the primary. All of our get out the vote efforts, our coordinated campaign, everything for you. So it is an endorsement. It is an endorsement. And he's buying it for $1 million. Shasti Conrad told the Seattle Times she was unavailable for an actual interview, she told the Times. Shocking, because I'm sure she was I imagine they were livid at the Mark Mullett campaign for complaining about it. But they got caught. They got caught selling an endorsement. Good for Mark.
They had to.
If Mark is, I don't know if it's said in the Seattle Times whether Jim Bruner found this and then went to the Mullett campaign or whatever it was. Okay. But it's hilarious and I love it. And Shasti Conrad said to the Times, in an emailed statement, she all but endorsed Ferguson, saying Democrats are united and energized this year. Yeah, unless you're Mark Mullett or a Mark Mullett supporter, that doesn't sound too united. Quote, after interviewing both candidates and considering the unanimous grassroots support from local and county parties, the Washington State Democratic Party enthusiastically offered AG Bob Ferguson the opportunity to participate in our 2024 coordinated campaign and assist our primary turnout operations, she said in a statement. In this unprecedented election year, we have no time to waste. I love how they still went through with these totally fake interviews of both Bob and Mark Mullett. Like, hey, we're going to interview you to see which of you we're going to allow to be part of our coordinated campaign with $1 million buy-in, knowing that they would never choose Mark Mullett and knowing he didn't have $1 million, even if he would have given it to them, which I don't think he would have. And he points out the hypocrisy of it in the Seattle Times article in his quote with Jim Bruner, because one of the interesting things is that, and I think he makes a valid point, would they do this if both the candidates weren't white? I don't think they would. Because imagine if you had a woman of color running for the governor's office and she hadn't raised $1 million. They wouldn't then give it to the white guy who'd raised more money when the woman of color didn't have enough money to give them. So they would never do this if this weren't, it sets up a crazy precedent. They would never do this if it weren't two white guys. And so the Democratic Party is in no position to criticize at all whatsoever the Republican nominating process, because at least that was real in the sense that real people cast their vote and said, this is who I want to endorse, whether I think that person has a chance or not. At least it was actual human beings in an open, transparent process that was public. No, you sold your endorsement to Bob Ferguson for $1 million. It's morally bankrupt and it's incredibly hypocritical. And it's, you might even say, unbelievable. Daydreaming about the joy I would get if I woke up after the November election and I was just like, could picture Bob Ferguson just crying in his bowl of soup or whatever he eats. I don't know. Okay, we'll get to a really quick national story because we're going long today, but I missed you guys. So why would we not go long? And we have lots to say. I have encouraged you guys, if you're thinking about selling your home at all this year, to get an early start on the process. There's a lot of things, if you've never sold a home, there's a lot of things you have to do to get it ready to hit the market. You know, there's marketing material that has to be made, pictures, video, all of that stuff. But also, what if you need to make renovations to your home? Some cosmetic updates to, you know, a lot of us, it's funny how we're willing to live in our home with things we don't like, but then we'll live in it for 20 years, then we'll turn around and sell it, and then we'll fix it for other people. It's like, you know, so everybody kind of does that. But Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, we're kind of waiting, you know, to see whether the Fed is going to drop interest rates. And he and I were talking about the fact that if they do, it would be best as a home seller to have your home ready to go to hit the market as soon as that happens.
If they drop interest rates, that's going to be a nice little rush, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, we're having a rush right now. And when rates drop, you know, assuming that they do, it's going to pick up, you know, even more. And if you want to take advantage of that, it's probably a great time to start that conversation right now. You know, whether you want to sell in the later in the spring, sometime in the summer, or even the fall. If you want to sell in 2024, you know, we're here to start a conversation with you.
Yeah, so go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. You can also talk to him about their listing boost concierge service. If you know you need to get some renovations done, they can manage all of that for you. They can even help you pay for it and take that stress off the process. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, another crazy story that happened while we were gone. Kristi Noem. Has any political career tanked as fast as Kristi Noem's? I really believe, had she not decided to write this book, autobiography, and put in there that she shot her 14-year-old dog in the face, which we get to, I really think she would have been Trump's VP pick on the shortlist because they were definitely zeroing in on her. And everything she was doing and how she was positioning herself seemed like Trump's VP. Now there's not a chance in the world. No chance.
Tone deaf.
And it's interesting because, so she wrote, if you're not familiar, she's got this book coming out and she wrote in it about how, and she, you know, she's from a rural family. I get it. All of that. I grew up on a farm. So let me preface that with, I grew up on a farm. We had a lot of rescue animals in particular. We had dogs and all of that. So I get that things are a little bit different on a farm or on a ranch. But she had this dog that was supposed to be for hunting. Apparently it wasn't good at hunting. In the book, she says it chomped on some chickens, a neighbor's chickens. So what'd she do to the 14-month-old puppy? She took it out back and shot it and killed it, which is crazy for unreal. So many reasons. The, I would say 99% of the internet was like, you killed that puppy. And then there was 1% that said, no, you know, the puppy had been aggressive towards livestock. That's what you do. No, it's not.
Regardless, no, you don't need to tell us.
Well, yeah. Also, don't say anything. Now, if the dog, and then she came out and she started adding things to the story saying, oh, it was a, it attacked a child or something. It was a danger to children. I don't know. The bottom line is at a 14-month-old puppy, first of all, if you haven't trained it, that's on you, right? But give it up for adoption to a family that doesn't have chickens around it or something. Just as an example, I'm sorry, I have to dwell on the dog thing, but it actually gets worse, if you can believe that, for Christy Noem. Our friend was fostering a dog and we watched it for just a couple weeks while she was on vacation because the dog hadn't been adopted in so long. And the dog had actually been adopted by a family with a cat, and the dog, the puppy, attacked the cat. So the family gave the puppy back to the adoption agency and said, hey, we can't have this puppy. It attacked our cat. So what did the adoption agency do? It said, we're not going to adopt this dog to a family with a cat. Problem solved. They didn't take it out back and shoot it because it attacked a cat. I mean, my dog, so on our, you know, I love dogs. So I just have a tangent. Nicole's like, when are you going to get to the story? I remember my dad killed one of our dogs, but it's the only reason, because you do, families in the country do take dogs out in the backyard and shoot them.
But when they're suffering.
Yeah. The dog had skinned itself wide open on razor wire and was suffering and dying. That's the only time I see something like that as acceptable, when the dog is about to die. Or, yes, if a dog kills or bites or hurts a human being so severely and has a pattern of that, like, okay, maybe that's not a dog that can be around people.
Well, that's the thing. I think that in society, we've okayed shooting a horse if it's suffering.
Right.
Like, a suffering animal makes sense, or an animal that you're going to eat. So that's the circle of life. You're going to eat. But for her to just decide to write a book and talk about shooting a dog for a bad reason.
Right.
That was ridiculous and tone deaf, because you've just lost most of America. Right. Because most of America loves dogs.
Well, and then Ron DeSantis the next day put out this thing about a dog up for adoption. And I was like, touche, Ron DeSantis. But anyway, this book gets worse. Now, the dog thing is terrible. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, she had a point. She was trying to tell people, like, I'll make tough decisions as a politician. So there's that, and just a really misguided story that she never should have shared. And then there's completely fabricating things. So in the book, Christy Noem writes that she stood toe-to-toe with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Turns out, as she was questioned about on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, that never happened.
Talk about meeting some world leaders, and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I've been a children's pastor, after all. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days, and that those edits will be in place, and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
No, I've met with many, many world leaders. Many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted.
I love how, as a way to get out of this line of questioning, she says, I'm not going to talk about my meetings with world leaders. We're talking about you talking about it in your book. So you could write about a meeting you didn't have with Kim Jong-un in your book in detail and how you stared him down. But now that you're being questioned about it, oh, I can't talk about my meetings with world leaders. Oh, how convenient. It's just insane. I mean, that as it should be for any politician, a career ender. It used to be that you couldn't lie blatantly about your record as a politician, as a Democrat or a Republican and get elected, let alone get reelected. And then we, you know, stopped caring about our own moral compasses and cared more about what our party did and political allegiances and all of that. And, you know, moral compass be damned. And now we'll elect people in Washington state who Lion Clyde Shavers lies about his military record. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, he only lied a little bit. No big deal. Well, I don't know. Kristi Noem cost her the vice presidency. I really do. Okay, let's see here. We'll get to your questions and comments. I'm sure they're great today. Did people miss us? Did you get the...
Oh, yes. They missed
everyone us. Everyone wants to feel missed.
Although they like the shows we had.
Yeah, we'll talk about them. We had some real good content while we were gone because we just can't leave you guys with nothing. I have been talking to Zach Abraham on the show with Bulwark Capital about financial stuff. But last week we had to talk to him about what's happening on our college campuses. Because I look at that and I look at these kids and I just think, do you have any prospects for a future? Do you have a job? Are you saving for retirement? What's going to happen? Are you relying on the social safety net? What is it? So Zach and I had some fun talking about just kids these days who don't, a lot of them, you know, either they're out being activists or they don't want to work hard and they don't know what it means and what it takes to earn a living.
Just in terms of competition, if you're a kid that knows how to work and you got a work ethic, you're guaranteed to win. I mean, you are guaranteed to win. So people are like, the American dream is dead. And I'm like, I understand why people say that. But I think because of what is going on in society, it's more alive than it's ever been. Because being able to, like, if you think about, like, what our dads and what our grandfathers dealt with, it, like, 60 hours a week working your hands to the bone,
yep.
That got you out. Like, that just puts you in the realm of everybody else, right? That was the bare necessity. I didn't guarantee anything. If you can do that with a smile on your face in this generation, you'll rule the world.
Man, that's so spot on. You just have to show a basic desire to, like, work hard with a good attitude. Unless you're white, you could do that. Then you still won't get anywhere. No, I'm kidding. Am I though? I don't know. Anyway, am I? I don't know. With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living and all of that, do not put your retirement at risk. This is what Zach Abraham and his team absolutely specialize in. And hey, if you're in your 40s or 50s or 60s, apparently don't count on your kids to take care of you either, because I'm not sure they're going to have retirements. So their Know Your Risk portfolio review, it's a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. No obligation. In fact, they don't even let you invest with them at their first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, I can assure you, you'll leave much more informed about the risk to your retirement. And maybe if you have young children, you can invite them to that risk review so they can learn about managing and saving as well. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. And in case I didn't mention it, you can schedule that at knowyourriskradio.com. You can also listen to Zach's show if you want to just get wise to all the stuff happening in our economy and the financial sector. Okay, questions and comments. Brandon Robillard with a $2 super chat. I bet too she does. Does what?
Underneath that, I put the...
Oh, sorry. Response question. To Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Anyone want to take bets if Brandy has her laptop today? Nicole would have sent me home to get it. I actually thought about it as I was leaving the house. I was like, yeah, it's here. Because I woke up with a killer migraine again today. I've been having migraines lately.
Stress.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm on... No, I mean, vacation was nice. But yeah, I woke up with... Maybe it's just that vacation post, like... Because we only got back a couple days ago.
Yeah, the studio thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's been a lot of work.
It has been a lot of work and a lot of money and a lot of work and a lot of work. on Tiffany Smiley running for Congress, Todd Walsh says, this shows why the WAGOP should not have a convention before candidates even file. Colleges. Well, I definitely think the reason for the convention didn't come to fruition. They hoped for unity. They hoped the party could coalesce around the best candidates, the most electable candidates, or that they could coalesce at all. That's not happening. So maybe they get rid of the convention process. I don't know. But as messy and crazy as it was, heck of a lot better than selling your endorsements for $1 million. On what's happening on college campuses, Krista M. says, the moment any other student or citizen was banned from moving freely through open spaces, this nonsense should have been shut down, 100%. Greg Olakis says, bring back spanking and this wouldn't be happening. Yeah, did you get spanked, Nicole?
I'm sure maybe before, a little swat or something, but I do remember one time.
You mean your parents beat you when you were a baby?
I think it's the threat of it that works, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I do remember once that we got older, my brother and I fought terrible. And my mom grabbed a wooden spoon and chased us, and we were laughing. And so we united over the hilariousness of my mom chasing us with a wooden spoon.
My dad was a big spanker.
Yeah.
And I remember really vividly my younger brother, I love him now, obviously, but we were in the backyard and we lived in the country, and I called him fat. Something.
Deserve what you got.
I don't know. So I'm going to just tell the story because it's hilarious.
Okay.
So I remember all of this so well. I turned my back. I was young. Definitely like elementary school. Turned my back, start walking away. I hear in the background. He hurled a hammer almost 30 feet and hit me in the back of the head. One of my many concussions.
Wow.
My dad, when I come to, my dad's got a...
And knocked you out?
Yes.
Wow.
It was a hammer to the back of the head, the flat side. When I come to, my dad's got a branch off the willow tree, just whipping him in the behind. Yeah, I have that. And, you know, he never threw a hammer at me again.
I would hope not.
Oh, wow. Good times. Okay, Russ Walker says.
Maybe not as good.
I remember he had his little bare bottom out. I mean, my dad had a lot of issues, right?
How old are you?
I mean, I was in elementary school for
sure.
So how old is he?
So
Tim would have been young, like probably second or third grade or something. But he hucked this hammer so far. The strength was unreal. Maybe he was a little older than that. Maybe fourth or fifth, and maybe I was in jail. I don't know. I'll call him today and ask him.
The threat of a spanking, that's all you really need.
Oh, yeah.
All you really need.
100%. Let's see. Russ Walker, there's no common sense in the Democratic Party. They don't have the wherewithal to remember the past and how horribly their actions failed and caused harm in reference to CHOP and, you know, just letting it play out again. No care or concern. On business insurance, is that what it is? Or no? Okay. I get it. Businesses that are being vandalized and who has to pay for it. Kyle T. says, on the graffiti, how long until we have a $300,000 a year graffiti czar of government who's tasked with cleaning the property? Yeah. No, they wouldn't be tasked with cleaning the property. It would be their job to figure out and to research climate-friendly methods for cleaning graffiti off of buildings without the runoff hurting the salmon and the whales. And then they would give taxpayer subsidies to the company that invented this cleaning method, and then that company would get a government contract, and they would hire 100 people at $100,000 a year to go out and stand there and watch the business owner use the product to clean the property.
Yes. And then, never really address the problem, because if you solve the problem, you kill the jobs.
Yeah, 100%. Can't do that. On Christy Noholm, Suzanne says she doesn't want to admit that she didn't read her own book and that a ghostwriter wrote it. But how does that happen? Even when you ghostwrite something, you do interviews with the subject that the biography is going to be about, and you have all that so you can do it. How does a story about meeting Kim Jong-un happen out of thin air?
Well, is there a world where maybe she did and she wasn't supposed to talk about it, and now she's trying to cover up the fact that she did meet with him?
I don't know.
I don't know why you would have to hide that, but then...
But then why would she talk about it in the book?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, she's just talking to a ghostwriter. Right. Oops, that came out. Oops, I wasn't supposed to talk about that. I don't know.
I think she probably just made it up.
Probably. I mean,
I think she made it up to someone and it got to the ghostwriter and the ghostwriter put it in the book. But the anecdote in there, you know, I've stared down little tyrants before, and it's interesting.
It's very
strange. Spencer Cole, all your special shows while you're gone on vacation were great. I watched the Gays Against Groomers one twice. Fantastic. Also, the Sheriff out of Southern California was good. Yeah, Sheriff Chad Bianco on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday was awesome. Riverside County, California Sheriff who just says it like it is. I saw a clip of him on social media. I was like, Nicole, we got to get him on the show. We should play a clip of that tomorrow. We just had a packed show today.
How cool would that be if he did run for governor? I mean, it would.
Yeah.
It would be really cool. Mm-hmm. Riker could win here.
Yeah.
And we have
Chad Bianco down in California. But so man, cool. If you haven't seen it, the interview we did with David Leon, who's gay, who's with Gays Against Groomers, just talking about this extreme gender ideology and how gay people in the gay pride movement has been co-opted to include all these crazy things and it's actually hurting gay people. It was one of my favorite interviews we've done on the show. And he was so nervous about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you killed it. You were so great. Yeah. And we actually saw him at an event this weekend and people were telling him we loved your interview. So make sure that you watch all those special shows we did while we were gone. But that one was particularly interesting.
So important. People speak up like him.
Yes, I love
gotta
it.
Stop. There yeah. has to be more of it. So
I agree.
He's not the one guy that does.
So nobody commented, or there were comments in the script, but the zebra thing. Yes. I leave for vacation and there's a zebra running free in my backyard.
Your backyard, yeah.
I would have been out hunting the not hunting to kill. And then I would have kept it. I would today, had I not been on vacation, I would have a pet zebra. I would have a pet zebra today because I would have found it.
Hidden it in the garage.
Oh, yeah. No, it'd be in the house.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'd wake up and just, Brandy's chilling with the zebra. Lucky would not like that, but
I liked how I was watching how it was misgendered all the time.
Yeah.
It was a boy and then it was a girl and then it turned out to be a girl. And I'm like, well, duh, she survived 6 days in the wild.
Exactly.
Of course it was a female.
Yeah, with a positive attitude. Well, you know, it's a Montana zebra, but the second you cross state lines into Washington, right, you get really very confused about your gender instantly. There's a little social contagion, even for the zebras.
Even.
So yeah, the zebra's already back in Montana, but that I was following it. Just, I think we needed that little fun story to cheer for the zebra, and the memes were good and all that
stuff.
Wes
Jones had too much fun with that.
He did. Wes Jones was all sending out the zebra memes and all that stuff. So, okay, how about we get to our closing sanity check, shall we? So we started the show by talking about what's happening on college campuses across the country and really this anti-American sentiment that's being pushed on these kids. And I have to say, the Deputy Commissioner for Operations of the New York City Police Department asks the single, probably the only question that really matters about what's happening on our college campuses and who is behind it.
This is very important. I took a picture of this. Lessons on taking over a school. Can you believe that? Lessons on how to take over a school at NYU. Tell me that somebody's not radicalizing our students. What NYU student would do something like this? Somebody's behind this. Lessons on taking over a school. One, out of the quad. Two, if you build, they will come. Four, listen to the organizers. Five, be prepared. Six, read the pamphlets. Lessons on how to take over a school. Come on, folks. There's somebody behind this.
Come on, folks. There's someone behind it. That has been your sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. We missed you guys so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I will note, subscribers, if you didn't catch it on yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers at the end of the show, I gave you a promo code, top secret, for 25% off our merch store at undividedpod.com. So that's going to be exclusive for subscribers for 2 days, and then we're going to open it up to everyone. But subscribers, go find that promo code. We'll also post it on Patreon Locals and over on X. So we will see you guys tomorrow at noon.